Hi, this is Michael Pfeiffer. This is another episode of the Metal Conversations podcast. In this episode, I'll discuss failure analysis of metal problems, product failures during testing or during use, or manufacturing problems are situations where we need to do failure analysis of the metals. Before I get into the discussion of the topic, first want to do a brief commercial. There are two things coming up that I wanted to tell you about. The first is a free webinar that will be on November 16. The webinar is titled Leveraging Metals Engineering for Clarity, Confidence, and Certainty. And during that webinar, I'll talk about how metals engineering can be used to help people get information to help make better decisions for engineering or help solve problems faster. And in a lot of organizations, they don't have metallurgy expertise on staff. And in many cases, I see people struggling to get information and even figuring out the steps to take to get the information for making decisions and solving problems. So that is November 16th at 10 a.m. Central Time. And you can go to my website to sign up for that webinar. The other thing is I just want to announce that we recently released a revised version of our tensile testing course. It's now a one-hour course. So you get a 1/10 CEU credit for it. And there's a lot more information in it compared to the previous tensile testing course. And there's more chances to apply the things that are taught during the course. So it's a great course if you're involved with metal testing or having to review certifications and metal data, metal testing data. So several years, a client called me and while talking to me on the phone, explained about a product failure that he was facing, and he was having actually a meeting with his engineering team at the same time that he called me. And he wanted my suggestions about possible root causes of the failure. Well, it sounds absurd, but this actually, it's not an uncommon thing where people show me a component and ask for ideas why it failed. This is impossible. The only way to perform a failure analysis and to help try to determine the root cause is to do some sort of destructive exam on the component to figure out, to learn about the materials, what was the failure mechanism, how did the materials degrade, were the materials appropriate for the application. And from this information, we can then be able to focus in on what the root cause of the problem might be. So having a meeting is not a productive use of time. So root cause analysis is an engineering process that's used to identify the action, event, or decision that led to a component failing in a product or led to a manufacturing quality problem. And the reason for doing the root cause analysis is to either fix the problem and prevent it from reoccurring, and that's for design and manufacturing. Also could be for structures as well, for buildings and houses. And it's also used to assign blame, and this would be in the case of an insurance claim or litigation involving a problem that occurred when something failed. And that problem could either be a water leak or fire damage or some sort of accident that led to monetary losses or someone being injured or even killed. Regardless, whenever a failure occurs, having a meeting to discuss potential root causes is a waste of time. When a problem occurs, we have to examine the component and the materials involved to get the data needed to determine whether the materials were as expected, to determine the failure mode and mechanism. And this information helps rule out potential root causes and helps us focus on probable root causes. Now, this applies to all materials, though I focus on metals and coatings. Now, the thing that's important to understand is that conducting a failure analysis helps, at least of metals and of coatings, helps us determine the metallurgical cause of a failure. And with that information, we can then focus in on the areas that contributed to the root cause or where the root cause occurred. So let me explain the distinction between metallurgical cause versus root cause. For example, let's say a component failed and it was determined that that component had low strength. And during the course of the failure analysis, it was determined that the part was heat treated incorrectly. So perhaps if it was a steel that during tempering, it was tempered at too high of a temperature or for too long. So the metallurgical cause of the failure would be that the part was heat treated incorrectly, which resulted in the wrong microstructure. The next step then would be to talk to the heat treater to find out what happened. Perhaps there was a furnace malfunction or an operator error or something else went on when the part was being tempered during the heat treating. Another example is a stainless steel pipe leak. So the metallurgical exam may find that the pipe leaked because a hole formed in the pipe due to pitting or pitting corrosion. And if it's determined that the material was as specified, then the fact that the thing corroded and the material was still okay would indicate either that the conditions were more aggressive than expected or that the design team didn't do a good job of identifying the conditions to which the material was going to be exposed, and they didn't select a material that had the sufficient corrosion resistance. So those are two examples of the distinction between the metallurgical cause of a failure and the root cause of a failure. So the determining the metallurgical cause helps point to the root cause. So when talking about a component failure, and actually I should say broaden it to being also a joint failure, that is a joint between components. When a component or joint between components fails, it fails because it's degraded to the point where it stops functioning as required. And we need data about the materials of the component or the joint to understand what the materials were exposed to, the failure mode and failure mechanism, and whether the materials met their specifications or were appropriate for the application. Now, this applies to both failure during testing, for example, during product testing, and also failure during use. And it applies to all products and structures. So it includes cars, hand tools, toys, medical devices, industrial equipment, and also hardware such as nuts, bolts, and brackets. So as an example, I worked on a project where there was a 12-inch steel shaft in a piece of industrial equipment fractured during use. So 12 inches in diameter, that's a pretty big diameter shaft. We looked at the part visually and with the stereo zoom microscope and then with a scanning electron microscope. And we discovered that the part started to crack due to fatigue. So a fatigue crack formed in the part. And then at some point, the load on the part got large enough where the rest of the shaft cracked all at one time. Then we also looked at the microstructure and the composition and the hardness. And what was determined was that the microstructure was really bad, and that something had happened during the heat treatment that resulted in a bad microstructure. The material was exposed to a high temperature for a long period of time. So the metallurgical cause of the problem was a bad microstructure that led to the material having low strength. And then the next step would be to talk to the heat treater to find out what they did, what went on during the heat treatment that resulted in the high temperatures for very long periods of time. So that was an example of a failure during use. Now, failure analysis is also performed for manufacturing problems. It can be that the supplier quality problem, that is the materials received from a supplier don't meet specifications, or the manufacturing output of a production line don't meet requirements. So for example, a component being fabricated has the wrong dimensions, or has the wrong mechanical or electrical properties, or has cracks or other defects. Or an assembly that's being made does not perform as required because of a problem with one or more components or joints in the assembly. So in this case, we want to know, do the materials meet their specifications? What happened to the materials during the manufacturing process? What are the effects of the manufacturing processes on the materials? So one example is from my time at Motorola. We had a manufacturing line that was making automotive electronics. So we were soldering electronic components or electrical components to a circuit board. Occasionally, there would be problems forming good solder joints between the components and the circuit board. And we'd have to evaluate the components to understand the cause of the poor solderability. So in all cases, the part being soldered to is comprised of metal with a coating on it. For example, it could be brass with a nickel coating and then a tin coating over the nickel. That would be one example. So the purpose of the tin is to prevent the nickel from oxidizing. And then the purpose of the nickel is to provide a surface to which the tin in the solder reacts with and forms a solder joint between the tin and the nickel. So there's a reaction between the tin and the nickel to form a tin nickel compound. Well, in doing the failure analysis, in many cases, I would find that there was a problem with the tin plating, that it was maybe perhaps porous or too thin, and it was, as a result, it wouldn't do a good job of protecting the nickel from oxidizing. And if the nickel oxidizes prior to soldering, then it makes it very difficult to form a good solder joint. In another example, something I worked on for a client, I worked with one client where they were having problems forming components from metal stock. This was a stainless steel metal stock. So it was material that was about half a millimeter thick, and they were forming panels out of the material, and they were having a problem where features in the panel were cracking. I got samples of both the material that was cracking and also samples of material that didn't crack, material that they could form panels without the cracks forming in it. And both the good and the bad material had the same microstructure, same tensile properties, and same composition. So there were no differences between the good and bad samples, at least metallurgically, which pointed to it being a problem with the manufacturing line, something going on with the stamping process. Maybe the tools were worn, or they weren't using enough lubrication. And I should also say that this was a mature product line where they'd been making these panels for a few years. So that was a situation where, by analyzing the materials, we were able to determine that there's nothing wrong with the materials metallurgically, and that helped point in the direction of focusing on the manufacturing process, and they did indeed find that there was a problem with their manufacturing process. When conducting a failure analysis, there are certain tools that are commonly used by metallurgists. First of all, just visually looking at the samples to look for corrosion and signs of cracking and other things that could contribute to the failure, and just understanding the failure or the problem. Then there's a stereozoom microscope, which is used to look at samples at magnifications between about 10 and 70 times for looking at design features and signs, looking for signs of manufacturing defects and cracking and other things going on. And then there's a scanning electron microscope that's used for looking at surfaces at high magnification. Optical microscope that's used for examining the microstructure of metals, tensile testing, a hardness tester, and optical emission spectrometry, which is a commonly used analysis for evaluating materials composition. There are other composition analysis techniques, but optical emission is one of the most commonly used. So those are the commonly used tools, and we use these tools to ask the metal questions, to get information from the metal. And the great thing about metals is that they don't lie. They'll tell us exactly what's going on if we ask them the right questions, but also we have to understand the information that the metals are giving and interpret them to make sense of the answers. I mentioned that failure analysis is also used for insurance claim issues and litigation issues. So I want to talk a little bit about that. I occasionally help with those situations when there's an insurance claim or litigation. This occurs when there's damage associated with a failure. It could be either monetary damage or someone was injured or killed. For example, if there's a water leak in a building or a house and there's a lot of water damage, then there's a high cost to the insurance company to make repairs for all the damage. And when that happens, the insurance company will try to find the person responsible for the damage, and the example I'm giving is for a leak, let's say it's a pipe leak, and get reimbursed from the parties responsible. So if it's a pipe leak, then it could be the manufacturer of the pipe or that caused the problem, or the installer, or it could even be the person whose building or house it was in, if they didn't do a good job of controlling their temperature or other things that can cause a leak to occur in a pipe. In any case, this process of taking action against another entity is called subrogation. And again, this occurs in the case of water damage, fires, loss of equipment operation, or when people are injured or killed. So in that case, determine the root cause to determine who's at fault. Was it the manufacturer of a component or an installer or the user or the homeowner? I'm going to give one example of a situation that I worked on. Water leaks inside of homes are common. One common source of leaks is the nut that connects the water line to a toilet tank. In many cases, that nut is a plastic nut. So I worked on a project where I walked into a home. This was after the water damage, and the walls had been taken down to the studs in the lower floors. So it was a two-story house. There was a connection between the water supply and the toilet tank on the second floor, and there was a crack in the connection. And what had happened is that the homeowners went away on a short vacation, a three-day vacation, and during that time, the nut cracked. And water started leaking out, and homeowners came home, and it was raining in their living room. So I got the nut, and I examined the nut to determine was there a manufacturing defect, or was it installed improperly, or was it something that the homeowner did? I determined that the nut had been installed improperly, and that's what led to the nut cracking and the eventual leak. And so the insurance company for the homeowner went after the plumber who installed the nut. And the plumbers, actually, they would have gone after the insurance company for the plumber that installed the nut. So that's a case of subrogation. Sometimes the subrogation or damages become a legal issue where an insurance company or person or business sues the person who's at fault to try to get reimbursed for damages. Regardless of the problem, whether it's a component that fails during testing or use or a manufacturing problem, and whether it's a design and manufacturing issue or a insurance issue, regardless, when a failure occurs, it's necessary to identify the component or joint that failed or the problem component or joint in the manufacturing line and perform a failure analysis. There's no point in sitting around trying to have a meeting to discuss the root cause of the problem. So the questions we want to answer are, what was the material's failure mode and mechanism? For example, was it overload plus a high stress? Does the material meet specifications? What was the composition of the material and its strength and its hardness and its microstructure? And the steps for a failure analysis are always the same. Collect background information surrounding the materials that are involved and what happened, the information surrounding the failure or the problem that's occurring. Then identify the samples we need for analysis. Then identify the analyses to perform, perform the analyses, review the data, and then focus on potential root causes based on the analysis data. The benefits of using this very well-established, proven process is that it provides confidence and clarity about the information we're going to get and the steps that we're taking, where there's no wasted time in unproductive meetings and the problem doesn't linger. The first step of collecting the background information takes between 15 to 30 minutes. And it's getting information about the materials, you know, their specifications, what are the materials supposed to be, what's their strength and composition, how were they heat treated. Get information about the failure, under what circumstances did the failure occur, how long had the component been in use, or what were the conditions the component was exposed to. If it's a manufacturing problem, you want to understand how long the manufacturing process has been going on, get information about the process, how was the problem manifesting itself during the process. Then select the samples. We want the samples that failed or that we're having the problem with. And if it's possible, especially if it's a manufacturing problem, we want to get examples of materials that we know are good or aren't having a problem for comparison. And in the case of a failure, sometimes we can get good samples too, especially if we're having a failure during testing, then there's usually, or I can't say usually, or are components that have not failed and we can use those for comparison. So we select the samples, then identify the analyses to perform. And as I mentioned, we're always doing visual and stereo zoom microscopy. And then we have to decide whether we need to do scanning electron microscopy. In the case of a fracture, we're always going to do scanning electron microscopy. Then evaluate the material's microstructure and its composition, and either its tensile properties or its hardness, and in some cases, do both. Then perform the analyses, then review the data. After reviewing the data, the next step is I meet with my client's engineering team to discuss the findings and the possible root cause. Now, this is important. So I'm a metallurgical engineer, and I have lots of design and manufacturing experience, but my clients have specific experience, both number one, with working with their products and with their manufacturing lines. So they're experts in those areas. And also when working with mechanical engineers, they're more knowledgeable about the stresses on the materials and how the stresses are concentrated and the circumstance and these situations to which the materials are being exposed. So they have that perspective and that knowledge. So I rely upon their knowledge and their perspective to combine and complement my metallurgy knowledge and also my knowledge of engineering and how products are used in manufacturing. And together we identify the probable root cause or set of root causes to go focus on. So it's really working together as a team. So a metallurgist is not working on their own. They're working with other engineers to help determine the root cause based upon the findings from the failure analysis. Once the root cause of the failure is identified, or the root cause of the manufacturing problem is identified, we can then identify measures to put in place to prevent the problem from occurring again. And that's at least in the case of design in the manufacturing world. And then in the case of insurance and litigation, then the insurance company or the lawyers know who to go after to get compensation for the problem. So that's it for failure analysis. I'd love to hear about your metals engineering experiences and failure analysis experiences with your products. Feel free to send an email or leave a comment. My email address is mike@imetllc.com. Also, let me know if there's a topic you'd like me to cover. Thanks for listening. Good luck with your metals.